The following is a relevant radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 26 before the top of the hour. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. Hey, if you're just tuning in, we're talking a little bit about no-fault divorce, its impact on marriages, the justice behind that. Is it just for a spouse to be able to say, I want out, walk out the door, and then suddenly, you know, you're splitting time with your children and you're stripped of half your assets and much more? In a moment, we're going to be joined by Bea McFarland. She's a woman who went through a very difficult time, and her husband left her. She's been fighting for her marriage, defending marriage, for a long time. You know, it's an interesting month. Just as a side note before we get back into the conversation here, I was reading an article earlier this morning, and I found out that January is the month when most divorces are filed. More divorces are filed in January than any other time. But what separates couples who choose to stay married from those who don't? Huh? That is such a great question. Marriage isn't designed to make you happy. I know a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get married. Everything's going to be blissful. It's going to be wonderful every day. Too many people, I think of happiness as something over which they have no control. But that's not true. Ironically, it's people's definition and expectation for happiness that I think sometimes undermines their own. Abraham Lincoln once said, people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. I was always struck by that. So, you know, how do you look at marriage? That's kind of the key here. You know, couples who choose to stay together know that they're going to be dissatisfied to some degree at some point in time, no matter who you married. You know, there's this phenomenon called the grass green syndrome, you know, where people always believe there's something better out there. You know, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And constantly they're asking themselves, is my spouse right for me? Would I be better off with someone else? You know, boy, these times are really tough. You know, it's unfortunate. Marriage is a vocation. It is a vocation. And couples who choose to stay together share a commitment to marriage as an institution. And that's really the key here. They're in it for the long haul, in good times and in bad, and for better, for worse, for richer or for poorer. And if you have that attitude, and that's what they found about happily married couples, couples that stay together view marriage differently. They view it for the long haul. They see it as something permanent, something that is not fleeting. I've got a friend of mine I was sharing a few moments ago about, I went to school with. He's on his third or fourth marriage. But when things get tough, he realizes, this wasn't the right choice for me. I'm going to move on. I'm going to find somebody else. And that can be extremely, extremely problematic. I've had the great privilege of talking with Bea McFarland many times in the past, and she's a very unique woman. I mean, Jesus made it very clear in the Gospels that divorce is not part of his plan, right? So when the Pharisees asked him about divorce, he asked them what Moses allowed, and they said, well, he allowed, you know, the writing of a bill of divorce. And Jesus didn't settle with Moses. He went back further to creation, telling the Pharisees, haven't you read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. The two shall become one. So they're no longer two, but one. And I think that's another aspect of marriage that we often forget. Well, God has joined together, but no man put asunder. So, you know, Jesus went further and said that Moses allowed divorce because of the hardness of heart. And that was a strong indictment from this, you know, from the Son of God. But that's the teaching of the Son of God. And it's not something that was made up by a bunch of old men, you know. These are the words of Jesus Christ. And it's something I don't think a lot of people understand. They think Jesus will understand because, you know, it was just the church that made this thing up about marriage. No, it was Jesus that laid down the principles of marriage, folks. And I think so often we forget that. Too many people fail to see this, and they use Christ to justify when they have violated a principle of basic justice. And somebody who's experienced that firsthand is Bea McFarland. She got married in, I think, I don't know, 1999, 98, somewhere around there, to a man of prominence in the Catholic realm. 11 years later, decided to divorce her and left her with no claim to justice in the civil court. She fought hard in the church's courts to keep her marriage intact. She believed her marriage was sacramental and that it should stay together. And there's actually a book that she co-authored, or at least had published, called The Gift of Self, and addresses this issue. And you can learn more about her at marysadvocate.org. And it's great to have you on the air with me again, Bea. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me.
You were married 99, 98, 97?
90. 1990. I got married in 1990, right. And my dear husband withdrew in 2003.
So, you know, for those who are listening, what happened? I mean, were you a bad wife? Was there a lot of bitterness? What happened that he just decided to leave you?
Well, you know, I would say that I experienced what I think a lot of people experience. There's marriage troubles, and rather than both of us working with those who are expert at helping couples, my husband chose to leave the home. We got married in the Catholic Church. We both appeared absolutely to understand what marriage was when we got married, and he left, and then he hired a divorce lawyer. And once you enter the divorce realm because of no-fault divorce practice, there's nothing the defendant can do. My own lawyer even told me, don't email your husband. Make sure you filter everything through me, which raked up lots and lots of money. Lawyers are making a lot of money at breaking apart families, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And what I started doing, at first I was totally overwhelmed, you know, like your caller said, the sadness is unbelievable. I've talked to adult men who are real bulky guys who describe how they are literally in the fetal position sobbing because this is such a violation against justice and your heart. But I learned a lot, and I started publishing what I was learning, and that's what I do with Mary's Advocates. Drew, I don't know if you know, but the first time we talked, I was just doing this in my spare time, squeezing it in when my children are gone.
Right.
But people have been donating to Mary's Advocates enough to have me doing it full time for over a year and a half now. It's like every month.
There's a lot of people who this affects, and I guess you're not alone. I mean, if my wife left me, I believe my marriage is sacramental. I do everything in my power to fight to keep us together, to reconcile somehow. But today with no-fault divorce, it's so easy to throw in the towel. Let's take a few calls for you today, too, Bay. Our toll-free number is 877-766-3777. Let's go to Anonymous, who's been waiting for a while to join the conversation, listening in Virginia. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, thank you. This is a great topic. I'm really enjoying it. I am familiar with Mary's Advocates and the Separated Faithful Support Group because I found myself, my husband separated after 31 years of marriage, and I had a sacramental marriage, and I don't know where the church is in this. I just don't understand. Like, I didn't get married by the state, and I don't know. I just feel like maybe there could be something. Like, I thought, I'm like, oh, well, we have vows that you know, it's indissoluble. But the state doesn't care who or how, where you got married. They just are going to issue a divorce. And, you know, I can't believe that unhappiness or not putting the tube on the toothpaste, like whatever, not putting the litter, like, you know, that you can just be issued a divorce.
Well, you know, you're still married in the eyes of God, though, you know, if it's a sacramental marriage. And babe, maybe you can talk about that because you went through the same situation.
Well, I can. You know, where is the church? What I was so happy to find is the church has teaching on separation and divorce. And one of the resources that we have on Mary's Advocates website is how to petition the church to ask the church to intervene. Because according to canon law, anyone who marries in a Catholic wedding is supposed to live with your spouse and you stay together unless there is some grave reason like adultery or abuse. So, we show people how to use the canon law, which is especially helpful if both parties care about being Catholic, because Catholics are only supposed to separate when there's something like adultery. And then the other piece is Catholic separations are supposed to be in accord with divine law. And, Drew, I have to apologize. In accord with divine law is, I mean, to me, it's a pretty highfalutin concept. So, you know, just in common sense, what is justice? Like your previous guest was talking about, you know, who is the cause of the breakup? Who is reneging on their marriage promises? You know, so I think that separations in accord with divine law could be that the person who was the causing the breakup would still be held accountable as much as possible to uphold their obligation. So for the caller there, if the other spouse thinks they're Catholic, Mary's Advocates has a real tool on our resource page to ask the church to implement our canon laws. The church is asleep maybe because no one's asking them to do it.
So what do you hope to accomplish? I'm just curious about your own situation. I mean, your husband doesn't want to be with you any longer, yet you are sacramentally married. At least that's – I don't know whether you went through an annulment process or not. That's assuming you didn't. And you want the church to enforce those particular laws. What does that do for him? Does it keep him bound to you so you can work on getting reconciled? What's the purpose of it?
The purpose would be, first, to implement the canon law on reconciliation. The canon law shows that before they can even look at a case about separation of spouses, and by the way, for Catholics, divorce is really just separation of spouses. It's kind of like on record in the civil forum because Catholics don't even believe in divorce. But according to canon law, before the church would even look at a separation of spouses case, the church is supposed to try to have the spouses reconcile. And when both parties are Catholic, the church could, if they wanted to, they could issue a fancy, you know, decree, a singular precept, you know, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, you promised to be married and you promised to uphold your obligations, so we're telling you to do it. Now, understandably, some number of people wouldn't care if the church were to instruct them, but some number would. I mean, like, I got an email from a man whose wife was serious Catholic, forcing a no-fault divorce. They were still living in the same house. He used the Mary's Advocate's petition, and he wrote me back later, and he said he had a great correspondence with the bishop's office. The bishop has assigned a deacon that knows the bishop well to go out to the parish priest, and they're going to talk to the wife. And the husband is telling me that he thinks somebody was giving his wife misinformation. So first it would be to try to get reconciliation. And then if reconciliation is not possible, the second thing we ask for in canon law is for the church to give instructions, what is the status of the parties? So at least scandal could be prevented.
Right. Okay.
So if you have someone who thinks there's a serious Catholic, but they're abandoning their marriage, well, you can't do that.
Right.
But all the observers, when the church is silent, thinks, well, you know, it doesn't look like anyone thinks there's anything wrong with it. So at least to be a moral teacher.
Right.
And that could be, it could be a motive for the person to rethink that, what they're doing.
All right.
And the other piece, canon law says the church is the one that has competence to instruct Catholics of a separation that's in accord with divine law.
Right.
Or the church is the one that has competence to instruct the parties right. of their moral and civil obligations towards each other and their children in a case of annulment. So right. even if a marriage was legitimately an invalid marriage, the church has competence, according to our own canon law. And this is where it gets into constitutional principles and crossing over church law and constitution, and I don't know if you want to get into that.
I'll tell you, let me just take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We'll also take a few more of your calls. I'm grateful for everyone who's holding. If you're joining us today, we're taking a look at no-fault divorce. We're taking a look at the church and divorce. I think, Bay, as you point out correctly, I mean, the church, you know, Catholics don't believe in divorce, but we'll talk about a sacramental marriage, the annulment process, and much more. And a number of people have been through this. They feel victimized. They feel like victims of a great injustice when one partner wanted to leave. So what is the church's responsibility in this? What is ours? How do we deal with this? How do we safeguard our marriage as well? We'll look at that and much more when I return.
I want a divorce.
I want a divorce.
I want a divorce.
I want a divorce.
We usually demand a divorce.
I want a divorce.
Me too.
I'm trying to think about what I want.
Yeah, me too.
Why don't you say it at the same time?
One, two, three.
I want a divorce.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Those have got to be difficult words to hear. Pray to God I never hear them, huh? I want a divorce. I know a lot of you probably have gone through that, and I'm sorry. I know the kids suffer a lot as a result of this as well. If you're just joining me today, it's good to be back here with you. You can check out this website, marysadvocates.org. Great resource there for you, marysadvocates.org. And I'm joined today by Bay McFarland. She has an incredible story, and she's been fighting for her marriage, I'd say, for decades now. It's been
my husband left in 2003 and divorce was final in 2005.
Wow, that hurts. All right, well, it's good to have you here. Thank you for what you do, for your witness for marriage. Let's go to the phones and take a few calls. Speaking of children, we have an anonymous caller in Illinois who's got an interesting comment for you. Hi, anonymous.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I would like to say that I really truly agree with the Ruth Institute, that I really applaud the work that they're doing, getting the voices of children that have gone through divorce. I also went through a divorce when I was really young, about 4 or 5 years old, pretty much about the same age as the kids that I have right now. So I kind of feel like an echo of how to see how they are when they're younger. And I can't believe that I went through a divorce. And It was a pain that I didn't have words to describe, but I always knew that something was wrong. You know, nobody talks about the divorce. It was due to infidelity, but my dad wanted to seek forgiveness, but my mom rejected him. She told him to get out of this house, and while they did try to work it out as best they can, my dad wanted us to go to the Catholic schools at least, so I feel that there was a grace in that. However, the sad thing is that even though you come to the conclusion, like after I finished college, it was when I realized how much divorce had an impact on me, because I started to read the studies of what children go through, and everything pretty much happened to me. And because my mom was very abusive, and she pretty much has a whole story of how I'm the bad one in the family. Oh. She made me the scapegoat of the family, and she abused me terribly. I suffered a lot. My family doesn't even know. They don't even acknowledge it now. But I can't even tell, like my sister was, you know, leaving, because they all embraced the contraceptive mentality and all the liberal stuff, because, you know, my dad, he was a go-getter. He came from Mexico. He didn't want his kids to be poor, but, you know, even though we became a little bit more wealthier here, he was able to succeed and send his kids to school. But of all this liberal indoctrination, pretty much they really exploit children of divorce, I feel.
It's a shame. Let's talk about that for a moment. Anonymous, first of all, thank you for calling and for sharing, bringing up a point that's important. Bay, there's a saying that when a couple divorces, the couple puts down their cross, but their children pick it up. And you hear that in the pain of this particular woman who just called and is the victim of it. And you have how many children, Bay?
We have four.
You have four children. They were young when it happened, too, right?
They ranged in age from 2 to 11 when my husband left. So, and the thing you just said, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, that when couples divorce, the children pick up the cross.
Yeah.
Sadly, a lot of people say couples divorce as if both parties divorce. Mm. And usually it's one person who wants the divorce and one person who doesn't. But the person who doesn't want the divorce doesn't leave a paper trail in the civil court about objecting, because it gets really, really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people who had the position that I can't sign to agree to be divorced because there's no reason for it, and I think we should reconcile. So that a lot of money was spent by our family and things, and I was going through without a lawyer. But the children, and I think no-fault divorce makes it worse. Because if you are a child and your parents had a legitimate reason to separate, like let's say one parent's committing adultery, well, why should the children be ripped out of their everyday life to go spend overnight visits with a parent who's committing adultery and a new partner? Wouldn't it serve the children better to stay at home? And then the person who's committing adultery, maybe they can come visit the children in their own home?
Yeah. Wow.
These kind of questions need to be addressed. And the civil forum dropped the ball, but the church could do it. If they're asked to do it, I'm hoping that they will start doing it.
All right, we'll go to our next call here. John's listening in Seattle. Hi, John. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks. Listen, a very brief comment and a brief question. So I thought Jennifer Johnson said something pretty cool before. She said the new evangelization is anti-divorce sermons. And I said, yes, the problem is the local Catholic church can't do an anti-divorce sermon because their policy regarding divorce is don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what Bay is pointing to. You ask your bishop some of these questions, and he'll kind of like, what do you mean? Who me? It's the for example, okay, here's my question. Drew, why does your bishop outsource marriage separations to the civil forum, which are often against divine law? Canon law says he is supposed to do the separations to ensure justice in those separation agreements. That is the don't ask, don't tell part, and I'm curious, have you ever thought about that, and do you know why your bishop outsources separations when he's supposed to do them?
Yeah, I have never given it any thought. Bay, you've been down this path, though, and I know this is an issue you've addressed many times. Why is it that the church will outsource marriage separations to civil forums?
I think it's because it's a repeating of misinformation. If you repeat misinformation long enough, people will believe it. And back before no-fault divorce, the civil forum may have given outcomes that were in accord with divine law. And then during the sexual revolution, when everything was going to crazy in a handbasket, divorce went down the toilet too. So I think it's that. That's all there is to it. That's why Mary's Advocates is publicizing the canon law and asking people to start asking your bishop to implement it.
Right. John, thank you for the call. I only have a moment or two, so I'm going to move along. We'll go to Daniel next. Daniel, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a quick comment. I only got in on the last part of the show here, but I just wanted to know if the speaker knew about the Title IV-D incentives, the child support incentives used to separate families.
Yep.
And, yeah, that I think that's something that's really the underlying cause in a lot of even divorces not reconciling, because a lot of the marriage counselors, if you go to one outside of a church anyway, a lot of them are paid by the state. They're state employees, or they have some sort of incentive also to make sure that the marriage doesn't get back together, so there will be a child support order.
That's interesting. Bay, I only have a moment or two left, so let me give me your perspective on how this is going to be remedied or changed. When you got incentives, when you got other things, have you been doing this for a while now? But I'm just curious as to what the big picture is and what you see coming.
Wow, okay. The big picture. We've got great laws on the books in the church, and the Constitution has great principles about respecting contracts. Until those laws are implemented by the people with competence to do so, it's a mess. In the meantime, Catholics who trust that they are married to their spouses will remain faithful. We will offer our sufferings. We will grow in trusting Jesus. We will work on loving and forgiving our spouses, and we will support each other. And I don't care what else happens. That's what's going on, Drew. It's a mess, and little by little, people who are living in it are standing anyway.
I should promote your marriage pledge, because it's interesting. Before you came on, I saw a study or an evaluation that was done on couples who divorce. They actually think differently than people who stay married. Address that first, and then secondly, I only have about a minute for you. The marriage pledge, if people want to sign that, why do you think that will impact their marriage and help them stay together?
Well, there are some number of people who actually go into marriage thinking, if it doesn't work out, I can get divorced, or they actually don't want to have children.
Right.
Those people aren't doing what the Catholic Church understands marriage to be. But for those who are marrying as the Catholic Church understands marriage, they, in their heart of hearts, absolutely want a lifelong marriage. They absolutely want children. They're not mentally disturbed. Rather than only saying vows at a wedding ceremony, Mary's Advocate has a marriage pledge, true marriage proclamation set, where they can put in writing and sign something that sort of looks like a prenuptial agreement, but it's a prenuptial agreement saying, we intend to be married as the church understands marriage, and if we have a dispute, we want it to be advised.
I got to leave it right there, Bay. Mary'sAdvocate.org.